online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog the Podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of the show, we can give you guys something you can take away to help improve your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, Senior Editor here at Sundog Studios and the host for today's show. And around the panel today, we have our Creative Director, Mr. Nick Green. How are you doing today?
Doing great, even though it's a Monday.
Even though it's a Monday, but we'll work through it okay. I've had enough coffee. I think I can keep this going.
There we go.
All right. Returning to the show with us is our marketing data analyst, Nate Madison.
And good morning to you.
And how are you?
Very good.
Welcome back to the show. And a new guest today is Sarah Longforce. She's one of our web developers and sort of our resident email marketing expert.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Fantastic.
Welcome to the show. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Well, we've got Sarah here for a special reason because we're going to be talking about email marketing. And we're going to kind of dive into the world and see if is email marketing dead? You can type that into Google and you'll literally will fill the page with headlines that say, is email marketing dead? So obviously, a lot of people have been talking about this for a while. Sarah, just on a high level overview, is it dead? Is it what's happening with it?
I disagree that it's dead. I think it might be transforming in the next couple of years into collaborating with social media, things like that, to make a more high-level marketing strategy for customers in the future.
What do you see combining? What elements combining with social media? How do you see it interacting?
Specifically, in the last couple of weeks, ExactTarget, which is one email marketing client that we use, has purchased one of the leading Twitter accounts for business so that the two of them can speak directly to each other in the future. So that's something that's coming up. There's new widgets and things that can go into creating emails so that your stories can be posted directly to Facebook and things like that.
What kind of businesses still benefit highly from email marketing? I mean, is there a specific vertical that does better than another?
I think companies with products to sell need to get those products in front of people, and people are in their email, so that's a good place to get it in front of them, remind them to check out their website, that type of thing. I think service-based companies have a more difficult time because you're constantly nagging, reminding them of who you are, but products, people are interested in seeing a couple features in an email and getting that opportunity to just click back through to the website. It's very handy. It's always in front of them in their email inbox.
Definitely, yeah, B2C, online retailers, that kind of thing. I think you're seeing quite a bit of the 20% off work really well with that immediate click-to-buy ability on there and the immediate conversion.
When we talk about if email marketing is dead, what's killing it? I mean, is it the spam filtering that's going on from ISPs? Are they weeding things out on behalf of their customers?
I don't think it's dying necessarily. It's just sort of evening out, sort of a market correction. Back when email was the brand new thing, it was huge, and it's still huge. I mean, there's still a lot of eyes that are going on email now. But I don't think it was long ago we were asking if television commercials are dead, and obviously they're doing just fine. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really just sort of an evening out so that everything's going to keep playing a little more proportional to how many eyes and how long are people looking at that particular medium.
I think the key thing with email now is you can't just throw anything at the customer and you can't just buy any email list anymore. It used to be everyone was opening their email, checking out to see what had just arrived. But now they're filtering so much just even with their own eyes, even if it makes it through junk and spam, as to whether or not they're going to pay any attention to it. Regular e-newsletters from a lot of different magazine publishers lists and things that are selling placements in their e-newsletters. We're seeing very low ROI in a lot of those placements. There's just too much inconsistency in what they're getting in that message, and it's maybe not focused for what they need. But clients who have their own internal lists are getting very good open rates, response rates, click-through rates from their emails to their captive audience, people who have signed up to receive email from them, said, yeah, I'm interested in learning more about what you've got to tell me.
Yeah, that for me personally, that's where the majority of my email marketing emails coming to me originate, are from, you know, authors that I follow, and, you know, I'm interested in the articles that they write on a daily basis. And you can kind of tell when it comes from maybe one of their sponsors, you know, the tangents that break off. Is that the future of it? Is it more of a narrow focus instead of just blasting out a broad message?
I think, like we've seen on Facebook, people want to hear directly from the horse's mouth, if you will. They want to go right to that source, hear what they've got to say. I'm less interested in catching it through an advertising message. So maybe that's a good answer.
Is overall the number of marketing emails you folks receive down?
No, I think I've seen a lot of data recently that it's still skyrocketing. Absolutely, that it's just huge. Yeah,
but is it from something that, you know, maybe you subscribe to a certain person and then you see them increase from there? Or are you getting just these random ones that are trying to sell you something that totally does not apply to you?
I'd say it's a lot more targeted now, kind of going back to what Nate was talking about. The idea that a lot of those opt-in laws as well really helped with the spam portion of it. But are you seeing a lot of times with these people who, once they do get your name and do get your permission to checkbox, they're going to take that to the extreme. And you're seeing two or three emails a day potentially from the same online retailer.
How much is too much? I mean, you know, you buy something from Amazon. How often do you want to get an email from them? When do you say, all right, folks, this is enough. Get me off your list. I mean, it's a personal opinion, obviously, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get here. For you guys, what's too much?
No more than once a month.
Yeah. Okay.
I could see it biweekly or weekly, but I think it really goes back to how much trash do you plan on throwing away at your doorstop when you get all your direct mailing stuff there. I mean, when you turn around and have that bin right there to throw away everything that's a postcard or mm-hmm. or direct mail that way, you just kind of get used to it, and there's a certain tolerance level.
Do you guys mind getting these messages? I mean, do they bother you?
I typically, anytime I find something I'm not interested in, they seem to be constantly hitting me. Mm-hmm. I just go right to the unsubscribe to try to clean it up so that I don't have to spend that time filtering through.
Or just put a filter on it and say, if it's from this guy, it's in the trash.
And I usually try to unsubscribe so that I can get off of their list, and rather than giving them hard bounces.
Sarah, what suggestions would you give a client if they want to start an email marketing campaign? What are some of the best practices that you would advise them to do?
Definitely the first thing is to start with an internal list. If you purchase a giant, you know, external list, there really is huge unsubscribe numbers that come from that. And, you know, it might be a good place to start, but if you can instead have your customers sign up, you know, it might start small, but you know that those customers are interested in receiving your emails. And you also, a good way to sort of let them know ahead of time if it's going to be coupons that they receive or special offers, or if it's going to be a newsletter. I know that my own preference, if I'm signed up to receive, you know, marketing emails from someplace that I go all the time, I'm more likely to keep them if it's some sort of special offer, rather than just letting me know that, you know, things are still the same and or things that don't really apply to our area. So I think really trying to segment your list to make sure that you're sending applicable things to the customers the way that they want to see them is the best way to get a really good open rate and keep them on your list.
Where do these lists come from?
Most of the time when I'm building lists, they actually come from forms on the customer's website. So if they, you know, have a profile form or something like that, or if you're signing up to receive special offers, you can add your email address on there. Those things are usually the most successful when they are actually placed in the area where the customers are looking for that information.
When you say a customer can buy a list, mm-hmm. you know, a list of names, well, where does that come from?
I'm actually not sure, you know, what the names of the companies are that we receive lists from. We have received a couple of purchase lists for some of our customers, and their open rates are less than half of what a list is where the customers actually subscribe themselves through a profile form or something like that. And mm-hmm. so, you know, the ROI is much more significant when you know who your customers are and they have preferences already filled out as to how they would like to receive their emails, what products they're interested in, things like that.
What drives the market value of a list? What makes this list A more valuable than list B? And what are those rates? What's the kind of the median going rate for a list these days?
I know Nate might be able to speak a little bit better to this than I can, but when I look at the numbers, it's usually 2 or 3% a purchase list might open and click through the email, whereas something that they have signed up for themselves is more in like 5 to 8%. Is that close, do you think?
It varies widely depending on the list and the company. Sure. We've seen internal client lists with open rates ranging from 30 to 50%. In fact, with any time they purchase a list, rates much lower than that. And often they'll go for a niche market, such as a niche publication mm-hmm. related to their clients, and they'll purchase a list from them. So we might call those an e-blast, where they're blasting the customer with a purchase list from a publisher. And in those cases, you're paying on a per email basis. You're not actually receiving the list and able to repurpose those emails, but the cost that goes into those is still quite high, often a couple $1,000s per email just to get the blast out. And at that point, the ROI just takes a nosedive.
How is the content of the email changing, Nick? I mean, are they becoming more multimedia? They're not just, you know, text with a link. I mean, what's working these days?
That's really been the sad part about email, and I think part of the reason why many people consider it dead is it's kind of facing the same problem that the print industry is. You're not seeing the ability to embed any sort of rich media. You can't put Flash in there. Really, you're relegated to animated GIFs, and even then, sometimes we're limited. With the wide variety of different ways that can be opened, we run into all the same problems with we do with cross-browser testing, anything else as far as websites goes, except worse. And so we really find that email is really the most limiting potential way of marketing to a consumer online that we have available to us.
How can consumers, what's the most common way they find a list that they want to join? Is it just through a customer's website?
I think a lot of times when you're doing that, you know, yes, I'm interested in the company that I'm currently buying for. And then there's usually a second checkbox there that says I want to hear from their friends and family as well. That's that checkbox that's throwing you into a list, and it's automatically tagging you with all the different attributes of that purchase that you just bought. So that if someone wants a list of people who are interested in outdoors, they're going to go to the guys on Amazon who bought the lawnmower.
Back in 2008, there was a study from the Direct Marketing Association that reported the value of the ROI on an email for every dollar spent on marketing. They were receiving a return right around $48. That's predicted to go down to about $38 in the year 2013. Nothing too earth-shattering, knowing, you know, that email marketing is on the decline, but it's not like it's completely dead either. Do you see it leveling off anytime soon? When do we not worry about if this is an effective method of marketing or not?
I think we're going to see the similar trend that we did with banner ads originally, where we kind of saw that people got used to the old games, the old gimmicks, and after a while they stopped paying attention and they stopped clicking. What we're seeing with emails is kind of the same. People are used to the old format. They're used to the all caps. They're used to the way that we format subject lines. I think almost a new medium or a medium, an email that's allowing for a lot more different things and has better security protocol so that we can actually have a more interesting email, get closer to that email of the future that you see in Demolition Man. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be the way we actually start driving those numbers back up. Otherwise, I think they're going to continue to stagnate.
Sarah, are the click-through rates on email marketing messages fairly consistent, fairly high?
Yes, they do fluctuate, of course, depending on the message. I think my own experience with the numbers, if they are strictly a newsletter, like you said, just with, you know, text with a link at the bottom, people are less likely to click on that link because they had to, you know, read the entire article. If it's more of a selection of related items so that they can pick and choose what they're interested in, but there was a variety of things that that were in the email with a little less text, I think those tend to do better. Is that what you're seeing too, Nate?
Yeah, and I would say that typically they're either going to click on your feature story or else they're, for the most part, going to abandon the email. Obviously, some take the time to read through and explore what you've got in your navigation on the left and what you've got below. But I would say that well above 50% of the clicks are going to come from your feature story. So they got a very short attention span in general. But if you do have a good picture and a good headline, they're more than happy to click through your website and read more about it.
We've certainly also seen higher rates of clicks on big old images too. I think those big hero spots, that kind of thing, we see a lot more clicks than we do on the little learn mores at the bottom oftentimes, with the exception of, I think, that feature story.
How important, I mean, you mentioned the importance of writing a good headline, subject line. What are some tips you can give a person on how to write something that will catch a person's attention?
Exclamation points.
We're just going to do a little research on this now.
Okay. Everyone pull out their phone, Google it.
I have, when I was researching my own white paper information, there was a lot of that, you know, those questions going on. And I think that one of the things that people sort of need to steer away from is having their offer as their email subject line, because spam filters are starting to filter out things like sale or special offer or free or whatever. Mm-hmm. And because that's, you know, those are usually the more spammy emails that you get.
Right.
So I think people are being a lot more careful about those sort of phrases. So something a little more informational rather than, you know, just trying to get you to look at the email might be a little more beneficial in the end.
Something that it's more, you know, what's the benefit for
correct
you type of a subject.
Or focused on the product or whatever it is, whatever kind of email it is.
Okay.
Yeah, and those spam filters also, they do allow for a little more leeway when you're actually addressing the person by name. They do have that personalized opt-in, and they can kind of check that by seeing things like the name. You get a little more leeway, so you can start off with 20% off, you know, which is probably something that everyone's seen in their inbox nearly every day today. But those would be those trusted kind of senders there that you would really be seeing that from.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to talking about lists for a second. Whether or not there are more or fewer email addresses on those lists, has the quality of the recipients on those lists increased, meaning have they targeted the right people?
I think the quality of what we kind of consider to be that spam stuff that we do allow through that does make it all the way to our inbox, the quality of it's increasing because you're seeing a lot more proactive work by the AOLs, the Gmails, the Hotmails, the Yahoos of the group, really taking out all those other ones that we used to see. So that if you go and you go deep down into your spam folder, you're going to see the same misspelled gibble garble, you know, home foreigner or home mortgage offers that you used to see. They're just not getting as far as they used to. They're getting picked up quicker.
That's one thing we all think about. You know, it's one of the first words that comes to mind when you hear email marketing is spam. So what can we do to turn that around to give it more of a positive image? What are some of the basic steps to do?
One of the best things, I think, from our customer standpoint is to segment according to what they are looking for to make sure that the messages that they receive are actually what they were asking for, rather than, you know, if you have a list of 100,000 people just sending out the same email to everyone, making sure that, you know, if they were looking for a specific product, that those are the only emails that they receive, rather than having them receive, you know, 5 emails a month about things that they never requested. So that will, you know, again, keep your numbers up and hopefully give you a better ROI in the future.
Yeah, well, some of the clients or some of the companies I've worked for in the past have actually segmented even down to the products so that you wouldn't just be getting a recipe of the day that had some of the products for, you know, that are certainly not in your pantry, but you could narrow it down to Bisquick. What's the new Bisquick recipe of the week? So that, you know, you're a loyal follower of this one particular product. And this might be something of value to you rather than, you know, making a broad statement about green beans because you happen to also own green beans, you know.
Mm-hmm. How long should the message be? I mean, you obviously were dealing with people now that have information coming at them from 24 different directions at the same time. You have a very, I mean, even a shorter opportunity here to grab their attention, but you also don't want them to open up, you know, if you get them to open up the email, do you want to give them everything you got, or do you just want to tease them enough to get them to your site?
I think for the main part, we would like to keep all of our really pertinent new product information above the fold, as it's called, you know, in the first third or so of the email, so that people with, you know, smaller browser windows, or if they're looking at it on a mobile device or something like that, they get as much information as they can have without having to scroll down. And also having, like Nick said, having your main story be the very first, very biggest thing on the screen, and have it be clickable, so that, you know, they don't have to read a story if they don't want to. They can click directly on the image to go to the story, and they don't have to read the teaser if they don't want to.
Absolutely. I think I've read the subject line and then maybe the main headline inside the image, and then that would be about it. I don't think I've ever read more on a website other than potentially really shiny text that may be near the bottom or something like that. Usually it's the pretty picture and the headline.
Yeah, I don't think length is an issue, but spending a lot of effort to add a lot of things to the bottom of the email and make it longer and longer isn't really going to produce a return, because they're not going to spend their time there anyway.
And for those of our listeners who may have jumped in the middle of the show, you're listening to Sundog the Podcast. I'm Lon Keller, senior editor here at Sundog Studios. We're speaking today with Mr. Nick Green. He's our creative director. Sarah Longfors, our web developer and our resident email marketing expert. And we also have Mr. Nate Madison, our marketing data analyst. Nate, I want to turn to you for this next question. What technologies are out there to track the effectiveness of different email campaigns? Is there technology in place where a customer can tweak their current subject lines or something like that in the middle of a campaign, knowing that they might get better results?
You know, that's a good question. You know, back in the old days, if you wanted to do testing with your email, you had to literally send the email four or five times. You might send it once or twice to a couple segments and then get your results, and then wait a couple hours and send the remainder to the list, depending on how they responded to your email. Today, though, with technology, and Omniture is a tool that we use that provides a service, you can literally send on the fly. You might develop four or five versions of the email, hit send to all of them, and the first 5 or 6% or maybe 10% of people that open the email, it's going to be login results for all four or five different versions of the email. And then as those results start to show a pattern, it'll tend to serve up the winner, or whichever email has the best open rate, the best success rate. That might be based on the subject line, it might be based on the images, the content. You can do multivariate testing to see what are people responding to, what are they opening, and what are they clicking. And then you don't have to send the email five or six times and do the results crunching on your own, but let the tool serve up the winner to the remaining 90% of the people when they get around to opening their email.
It sounds like you can almost like build sort of a real-time dashboard in like Salesforce or something like that to monitor this as well. Is that correct?
Right, and you can monitor if you wish, or the tool can just monitor for it yourself and automatically start to push the winner to the remaining, you know, 80-90% of folks as they open theirs the next day, or, you know, 2-3 hours into it, or, you know, throughout the next couple of weeks. So that 90% of your list is getting a targeted subject line, images, content, and your first 10% really acts like a beta test group.
Do we know if we can track an HTML email if they don't allow the images to actually be loaded, so that you just get that text only? Because I thought that was the main reason for adding that additional step in, where you have to click, you know, display images from the sender, was the main idea that if we were pulling a file from their server, they could tell that we were a live email, and then we'd be more targeted for spam. Is that ringing any bell?
I know that a lot of email clients, both of them that we use right now, supply tracking images within the email, and that's one of the reasons why some more advanced email clients will automatically mark any marketing email as spam if it's not coming in as text. There's not a lot that we can do about it. That is just the way that they track how many emails were opened, is if that image came back to the server as being opened. I know that people are looking at it, but I'm not sure that there's a way around it unless the end user is using it as a text version instead.
Well, it's kind of a nice thing then. At least we know that our open rates are that or better,
yes,
than the percentage that we're getting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
from developing different types of websites, Nick, you take into account, you know, what's it going to look like on Safari, what's it going to look like on Firefox, et cetera. How difficult is it to do that in the email marketing world when you mentioned, you know, you mentioned several clients, Nick, you know, we have Gmail here at Sundog, and, you know, unless you've already pre-approved it, you do have to click a button to download those images. What are some obstacles, steps, you know, pros, cons of the various clients?
We usually, when we're doing our QA testing, we start with a program called Litmus, which is online, which is fabulous. And basically it sends you, you can send the email to this Litmus client, and then it supplies you with screenshots of one of probably 16 different email clients, so you can see what it would look like in Gmail or Hotmail or AOL, if that's what you use. There's a huge list of them, and there's, you know, Outlook 2003, Outlook 2007, so you can go back and see what your customers would see if this is this email that you sent. And it just helps a lot. We still do, you know, physical testing with email addresses in each of those clients, but it just gives us a really good, you know, screenshot to show the customers that, you know, if you're looking at this in Gmail with your images off, this is what you're going to see. And just shows them before we actually finish the email what it will go out looking like.
Is that some of the information that we can gather from the clients when they click on one of these emails? Do we know what type of client that they're using? Is that some of the information that's normally gathered?
We typically know if they open it in text, HTML, or through AOL's server. And that's usually the only feedback we get, unless, of course, you've got predetermined tracking through your email provider. But most reports, again, it's just text, HTML, or AOL, and you can see the results broken out between those three.
Is that information used to, let's say, refine an email down the road so you know what, you know, who's actually opening these things?
I don't think we, you know, would necessarily use that data, because you're left at the mercy of the opener to determine what they're going to use. I think back to what Sarah was saying, the goal is, though, to make sure that wherever the majority of your list is using, let's make sure it looks good in whatever format they open it.
Let's talk about how email marketing and social marketing and mobile marketing are all tying together. Is part of the goal of a general email marketing list to be able to grow both the social and the mobile side simultaneously?
I think just like when we saw with websites, one of the large areas that we wanted to address was converting people and getting their information so we could contact them regularly on email. Now I think we're taking that a step further and trying to get our email list to also follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, so that we can touch them even more often. I mean, we're talking about people getting tired with their inboxes, getting cluttered with, you know, once a week or something like that with a message when you're talking about email. On the other end, on Twitter, really talking to them twice a day isn't unheard of.
So basically, you know, even though social is technically putting a dent in email marketing can be built to take advantage of that.
Absolutely. I think that a communication stream really comes more of a conversation. You can start really bringing them into that community, which really with email, I think, is one of the things that you see with a lot of the more popular ones, is emphasizing that community. These, you know, 20% off only for our little group, just because you're in the know, because you're part of our inner clique. And I think that whole idea, particularly with online branding right now, seems to be a theme that we're seeing in a lot of different mediums.
I also think that one of the personal items, you know, with email is that your inbox now sort of feels like your own personal space, whereas your Twitter account or your Facebook account, those, I mean, are read by everybody. So you sort of don't feel the same way about those more social media aspects of it, because that's why you signed up for Twitter, was to receive updates about everything all the time. So I think there's just a different feeling, you know, of your own personal space between your email and your Facebook page or something like that.
So it's more of it's becoming more of a personal connection, sort of like your mobile phone is.
Exactly.
Is a personal connection.
Absolutely. And I think whoever a consumer's eyes are looking, I think that's where the ad dollars are going to be spent. And more, I think they're going to be trying to create one unified front, one unified campaign or brand image that's going to be using every single other facet there. And so really getting you involved with more different mediums through links to Twitter, getting you involved on Facebook by using email, and you know, getting people on RSS feeds and sending you to the website and letting you know about special offers and behind the scenes videos. All those are different kind of touch points with the consumer that I think email really is kind of a way of politely invading someone's life and bringing them back to your brand community.
And it's important to remember, too, with mobile devices, it's, you know, in the current stage, it's a lot easier to view an email than it is to view a website on a smartphone. And so that's still a medium we can reach them with mobile usage going up. Twitter's going to be huge. Facebook is going to continue to be huge on mobile. But email can be that sort of one-to-one communication tool through a mobile device where it's still fairly functional. It's gonna be a few years out before everyone's got phones in their hand that can actually view a website and take in all the content and the images and formatting correctly. So I think as we keep an eye on where do they spend their time on their mobile phones, is it only going to Twitter? Is it only going to Facebook? Are they still using email very thoroughly on their mobile phones? That's going to be where the effort needs to go.
It's still overall a fairly lightweight form of communication, and by that I mean the amount of data it takes to push it through. As mobile is growing, you know, we all see the growing pains AT&T, Verizon, Sprint have with their data networks becoming oversaturated and everything. Text messages can still get through fairly easily.
Absolutely. And I mean, emails too, once again, just because we have so little, we tend to keep them light on the image side to begin with, are just that much more easily scaled, and they're built in a way that is a lot easier to interpret, I think, by a lot more different browsers. When you're not looking at it pixel by pixel on a computer screen, but you're viewing it rather on a small little PDA.
Okay, very good. Thanks for joining us today, guys. If anyone out there has questions for the panelists here at Sundog, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. For Nick, Sarah, and Nate, I'm Lon Keller, and we'll catch you next time for another episode of Sundog, the podcast.
You know, that's a good question. In the old days, you had to. Sorry, you cracked me up.
That's okay. You cracked me up, dude. That's a great question, Lon. Good thing I told you to ask it.
All right. Give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, that's right.